In 1854, a single party took over Massachusetts government in a landslide victory. After election night, 40 state senators and all but three of 379 state representatives belonged to this one political party. The same party had won mayoral races in Boston, Chicago, San Francisco, and New York City. This party boasted over 1 million members nationwide. But the really shocking thing about this party, and it's what we now call the Know Nothing Party, is that it didn't exist before 1850. In a few short years, the Know Nothings went from total obscurity to incredible power. And a few short years after that, they were gone. So why were the Know Nothings so successful, and why was their moment in power so brief? To answer that, we need to go back to 1850. And to do that, we talked to Tyler Anbinder, professor of history at George Washington University.
And I study the American Civil War period and American immigration and immigration history.
This is probably a hard thing for a historian to admit, but Anbinder says that the 1850s were kind of boring.
What are you going to do after work? There's no TV, there's no radio, there's no internet, so you join groups and you have meetings. And so it was very common for someone, you know, to have their temperance club meet on Wednesdays and their, maybe their charitable group meet on Thursdays.
Fraternal orders and secret societies became really, really popular among men in the 1850s. They came up with code words and secret handshakes. They met in private lodges and halls. If you look at fraternity rows on a lot of college campuses, you can see Greek letter societies that date back to the 1850s. The Know Nothings began as one of these fraternal orders. In fact, if you visit Ashfield, Massachusetts, there's even an old lodge that was used as Know Nothing headquarters. The name Know Nothing was given to party members because if asked about their club, they claimed to know nothing. They called themselves the American Party.
I think it's safe to say that the Know Nothings pretty much make up a cross-section of Americans if you leave out immigrants.
Some members of the Know Nothing Party were wealthy, some were poor, some were from cities, some from the country. What drew them together was one big issue: immigration. The nation, and Massachusetts in particular, were undergoing big demographic shifts.
In 1853 and 54, immigration has reached record levels, never before seen in American history. So much so that you have cities like New York that are coming close to being half foreign-born.
Due to the potato famine in Ireland, an estimated 1.5 million people immigrated to North America over the course of 4 years. 100,000 Irish people arrived in Boston between 1846 and 1849. Today, it's pretty hard to imagine Boston without its immigrant heritage, and particularly without its Irish heritage. But in the middle of the 19th century, a lot of people thought that the Irish would never be real Americans.
These are people who feel like the character of the country is being changed by the immigrants and feel that that change of character is going to hurt the country.
What's more, lots of ministers in Protestant churches preach that the greatest sins in the world were three things:
slavery, drunkenness, and Catholicism.
The Irish immigrants were Catholic, and they seemed to bring with them a drinking culture that clashed with temperance-minded Protestants. In the eyes of a lot of New Englanders, the Irish embodied the biggest threat that America had ever seen, and someone had to step in to stop their influence from spreading. But for the Know Nothings to cross over from the clubhouse to the statehouse, something else had to give. In the 1850s, the two-party political system in Massachusetts was on the cusp of change.
It's really political chaos. The old Whig Party was basically falling apart.
This is Tom Whalen, associate professor of social science at Boston University.
So there were a lot of people searching for a political party to represent them.
In 1854, the American Party took advantage of this power vacuum to sweep the elections in Massachusetts. Overnight, the Know Nothings won the entire state Senate and the majority of the House of Representatives. Their candidate for governor, Henry Gardner, beat his Whig opponent in a landslide victory. In the same election, nativists took over many city and town governments, including Boston. The party wasted no time in proposing and passing legislation that curtailed immigrants' power in Massachusetts. Here's Tyler Anbinder again.
In Massachusetts, they outlawed the teaching of foreign languages in the public school.
to dispel from popular use every foreign language, so great a preserver of unassimilating elements of character, to print all public documents in the English tongue alone, to ordain that all schools aided by this state shall use the same language.
The Know-Nothings required the reading of the King James Bible in school every day.
The school committee in each town and city in this commonwealth shall require the daily reading of some portion of the Bible in the common English version.
They passed a law in Massachusetts banning state judges from naturalizing immigrants and making them citizens. That was a way to make it harder for immigrants to become citizens and thus limit their political power. The thing the Massachusetts Know-Nothings most want to do, but they don't accomplish, is changing the law to make it 21 years until an immigrant can vote.
None but the native-born shall be eligible to office, and no alien shall be allowed to vote unless he has been a resident within the United States 21 years and legally naturalized.
They do manage to get through a bill adding 2 years so that immigrants have to wait 2 additional years added to the original 5 until they can vote.
The Know-Nothings also succeeded in removing Latin inscriptions from the Massachusetts State House. Latin, to the Know-Nothings, represented the foreign influence of the Pope. In 1855, at the height of Know-Nothing power in Massachusetts, the General Court enacted the Intoxicating Liquors Act, which made it illegal to manufacture or sell alcoholic beverages without a license. But the only legal licenses that would be issued were to a town or city agent, who could then
purchase spirituous or intoxicating liquors to be used in the arts, or for medicinal, chemical, and mechanical purposes, and no other.
What's more, if you lied about what you wanted to do with that liquor, you could wind up with a hefty $20 fine. The Know-Nothings across the country were in agreement about immigration, but they didn't all agree on another big issue of the day, slavery. In Massachusetts, Governor Gardner and the Know-Nothing legislature actually passed reforms that made it harder for runaway slaves to be returned to southern plantations. Massachusetts Know-Nothings worried that immigrants would fail to support their anti-slavery activities. In other parts of the country, many Know-Nothings were pro-slavery. This internal divide didn't matter when immigration was the top issue for Massachusetts voters. But as time went on, the one issue Know-Nothing Party started to lose popularity.
What happens is you have all these efforts by pro-slavery forces to try to spread slavery in the mid-1850s, and so people come to the conclusion that, you know, the Pope is not as immediate a threat as is the slaveholder.
And then the Civil War buried the Know-Nothing Party for good.
The Civil War changes things because now the country's political division is clearly the slavery and the race issue, not the immigration and the religion issues. And the Civil War, with the hundreds of thousands of deaths, makes that something that's going to remain the case for generations afterwards.
Tom Whalen has another idea for why the Know-Nothings faded from power so quickly.
What really did in the Know-Nothings here was just kind of their extreme views with regards to immigrants. And, you know, I always like to say, you can't argue with demographics. Demographics is fate politically. And that's certainly been the case here in Massachusetts and the rest of the nation. Even then, the Irish immigrants knew that their true destiny, their political power, lay in their numbers. And of course, they would take over, basically, the Boston political machinery by the end of the 19th century.
The newly formed Republican Party, Abraham Lincoln's Republican Party, replaced the Know-Nothings in the run-up to the Civil War as the dominant anti-slavery party and absorbed most of the Know-Nothing voters. Almost none of the laws that the Know-Nothings passed in the 1850s are with us today, but they did leave a powerful political legacy.
You know, it's kind of passed down from immigrant family to from parent to child that the Republicans are the party of the Know-Nothings, and so you can never support the Republican Party, no matter what, even if they don't talk about immigrants, you should know that that's what they once did, and they once tried to take away our rights.
Meanwhile, the Democratic Party successfully courted the Irish vote.
The Irish were a key constituency now. They became a swing vote that they could not be ignored. Outgroups become in-groups because of the sheer numbers that they can bring to bear on the political process. And depending on how politically sophisticated they are, they can marshal those numbers, they can put together a political machine that can stay in power for a very long time. The Irish Americans made that possible.
And that's really the legacy that the Know-Nothings leave behind. They couldn't stop immigration from changing the United States. Because, as Tom Whalen says, demography is fate.
Through their success, they opened the door to other minority groups, such as the Italians, Jews.
The constant thread is the idea that today's immigrants are worse and different than past generations of immigrants. They can't become true Americans. That's a sentiment that you see right after the American Revolution, all the way up till today. As people see that Irish Americans assimilate just like other Americans, and they adopt American values and you know, help change what an American value is, then what it means to be an American changes, and that's constantly happening in American history, and it always has.
This podcast is a production of the Commonwealth Museum, www.commonwealthmuseum.org. Today's show was produced and edited by Anna Pinkert. Additional narration by James Fisher. Research by Mirella Bloom, Rafaela Kenny-Sincotta, and Mary Kincannon. Special thanks to Tyler Anbinder, Tom Whalen, John P. Connell, Matt Leonard, and WUMB. The executive producer is Stephen Kenny.